Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. Find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Ooh, our 60th anniversary is coming up. Can you believe that? It is. Next year. To learn more about the PNWA, as well as their outstanding Summer Writers Conference, which will be this July, go to PNWA.org if you want to sign up for the conference. It's going to be a good one. PNWA.org. I also should say that I will be teaching a class at the Writer's Cottage, the PNWA Writer's Cottage, in out here in Washington. And it's going to be on finding your story this week, 2 weeks later structuring your story, and then 2 weeks after that selling your story. It's a three-part class. So if you want to sign up for that, go to PNWA. So before I begin the show, you know, one of the advantages of having your own show is you get to very periodically wish or let the people you know, you love, how much you care about them. And today is one such day. Today is my mother's birthday. And if she is as responsible as anyone I know for this show existing and for me doing what I'm doing now. She's a great woman. She's a reader. She's a devoted writer. And she's a great mom. You know, there's all kinds of parents in the world. There's some types of parents are very useful to their children the parent's very useful to the child by telling them that they cannot do what they want to do and they will never be what they want to be. This can be very useful for the child because the child has to then learn it for themselves. My mom wasn't one of those types of parents. She is a relentless cheerleader, and I have always been grateful for her support. So thanks, Mom. Happy birthday. Happy, happy birthday. Now, to our guest, Ms. Maureen McQuarrie. I had the pleasure of interviewing Maureen a couple years ago. Maybe it was 3 years ago now. I think probably just two, when she released her debut novel, The Peculiars. But she's got another one out now. This is part one of a two-part series. It's the Time Out of Time series, a fabulous young adult series. Beyond the Door is the first book. It's just out now. And she's with me. Oh, she is. Maureen, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks, Bill, and happy birthday to your mom.
Yeah, everybody say happy birthday, Judy. Say it. It's good. Maureen, you know, speaking of my mom, interestingly, mm-hmm. She said she wanted to, when she read the description of the show, she's like my biggest fan. It's just, what can you do? I can think of worse things. She said, steampunk. What's that? I'm going to have to watch the show just to find out, because The Peculiars was steampunk-ish, if I'm remembering correctly. It's been a few years now.
I would say steampunk light. It had touches of steampunk in it, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so for the uninitiated, what is that? What is the steampunk?
Well, think about if in the Industrial Revolution, if we stayed with steam, and that steam was the greatest and best technology, and all of the inventions since then were powered by steam. So you'd have steam-powered typewriters, you could have steam-powered computers, and it's really set usually in the Victorian era, but sometimes it's futuristic, but it often has that Victorian feel to it. And there's a whole steampunk culture. There are steampunk bands, there's steampunk clothing, steampunk art, and it ties into kind of the maker community.
Yes.
So it's a whole separate culture that you see it showing up in a number of books. And so Peculiars had a little feel of that.
Yeah. Were you a fan of that genre yourself to begin with, or did you just kind of find its way into your story?
It really, because the story was set in an alternate 1888, and I wanted to stay true to the Victorian world, but I also wanted to take a sideways twist on that. Steampunk just worked really well with the story. And also I had a quirky inventor who owned a library, And so having some wonderful steampunk inventions in there worked really well.
You know, so the next, so your latest project, the book Beyond the Door, but it's part of the Time Out of Time. I guess you can call it a series because there's going to be two books for now.
Two
Do you
of
think
them.
There might be more?
It's always possible.
Okay, but two for sure.
Two for sure. The others, I don't know. Could be.
Okay. So the book is Beyond the Door. Now, it seems to me, unless I've misread that, that you aimed slightly younger on this series than in on The Peculiars. Is that true?
It is. Peculiars is 12 and up, and this is really a middle grade book. I would say fourth grade. Fourth grade through sixth or seventh grade would be the target audience.
And so how does that work for yourself? Did you say, I love these kids, I want to write a story for them, and then you found this? Or did you have a story come to mind and say, this is a middle reader story, I think I need to adjust it?
Well, when I wrote this, I actually wrote it quite a long time ago, and I was working at a middle school. I was coordinating a program for gifted students. So I was surrounded by middle school students. I was breathing them in, you know, taking in their language, everything they did and said, and my own kids had just passed that age as well. And so I was really writing the story that I wanted to tell them and the story I hoped they wanted to read.
But you sold The Peculiars first.
I did.
Yes?
Well, I actually sold them at the same time. Abrams bought The Peculiars and the Time Out of Time series at the same time, and then they decided to release Peculiars first. So it's been sitting there. Beyond the Door has been sitting there for a while, ready to come out as soon as Peculiars had made its debut.
Now, did you write both books while you were still teaching? Did you write both Beyond the Door and its sequel?
No, I wrote Beyond the Door and its sequel, which will be The Telling Stone, while I was still working, and then I wrote Peculiars right after that.
All right, so here's my question. So you wrote those, then you wrote The Peculiars, then they sold, all of them, kaflump. All right. So here's my question for you. I interviewed you for The Peculiars. Was that probably in 2012? I interviewed you then. Now this is coming out. And then when are they going to release The Telling Stone?
Next March.
All right. So then a year from now, The Telling Stone. So what have you been doing? That is years of all these books coming out, which is awesome. But what are you doing in the meantime? These are all the stuff that was written. So what you been doing?
Well, okay. So there's always the new thing in the works, right? So I have two manuscripts that I've finished and that we're hopefully going to sell. We'll see. And then I've also been going through what you do. You know, after you have the book sold, you go through edits and you go through copy edits. And so I did all of that with Peculiars, but then I just finished the copy edits for The Telling Stone. And we spent quite a lot of time working on some special things for it, a map that's going to be in there and a special tree code that is on the map. So it's really a map cipher. And just like there's a code in Beyond the Door, this will be a code but in a different format.
Hey,
and then the two I've been working on. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you make the code? Did you come up with the little language? So I'm just going to tell our listeners, if you haven't read the book, it's so funny. I just figured out that there was a code. I'm so dumb. This morning, as I was going through it again, and I looked at the bottom of the page, and I said, hey, there's all these little marks, and they keep changing from page to page. I said, I know what this is. Of course, on the front page of the book, it tells you there's a code. But there's a code that readers can decipher. It's in another language.
It's actually in ancient Irish. It's Oyam, which if you go to the British Isles, you can still see Oyam on some of the standing stones, the carvings there. And so it plays a part in the book. And as I was talking to my editor, we thought, gee, this would be great to have the kids reading the book do some of the decoding at the same time that the characters in the book are. And we found a font that's actually based on Oyam, and that's how it came about.
That's such a cool idea. Okay, so you answered my question. So OHAM, spelled O-G-H-A-M, is not your own invention. That's ancient Irish.
No, it isn't. It is ancient Irish.
Is that before the Romans showed up? Is it that ancient?
It is. It is. It was on not just on stones, but of course stones are where it's preserved, but it was on wood. You could find the markings, and you still can in lots of locations in Wales and in Ireland and then some in Scotland.
So, hey, so when you were doing the copy edits for, say, for the Telling Stone, now, was Beyond the Door the first complete novel you'd ever written, or
Yes.
Wow. Ooh, congratulations.
It really was.
So, but I would imagine that between that book and then the Telling Stone and the Peculiars, your writing evolved. Mm-hmm. And so when you picked up the Telling Stone and copy-edited it, were you cringing a little bit, or were you okay with that, with going back into that older version of yourself?
I was absolutely cringing. You know, you always, at least for me, I always love the most recent thing that I'm working on. So, you know, since I wrote those, I have two other manuscripts that I've been working on and I'm just about finished. And I look at my writing then and I think, wow, my writing is so much better. I didn't have skills back then. And so every time I go back and look, I can change something or I can tweak something. And there comes a point when you just have to walk away and say, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to keep changing this. But I definitely cringe and I think, wow, if I knew then what I know now. And I know that the next thing I write, I'll think the same thing again.
Well, we hope we keep thinking that, right? Because you want it just to keep expanding. Okay, so, but here's my question for you. Mm-hmm. As you're reading through that older manuscript, what's the one thing in your head you kept wanting to say to the younger Maureen? If you could have taken her aside, what would you have said to her?
Okay. I would have said so many things, and one is really hard. I think I would have told her to make sure that she had the risk up front, and the risk right up front.
The narrative risk.
The narrative risk, and that you have to have the tension in every chapter that's going to make the reader keep reading, and I don't know. And I, you know, every time I write, I think about that. But it's important to always be learning something new. And so right now I've been thinking a lot about subtext and what I'm working on now. And I've been thinking about how the character's inner journey is really the heart of the story and how the character transforms.
Yeah.
So always new lessons.
Yeah. Yeah, so you felt in reading these books that you were just a little slow in getting to what the big challenge of the story was. You put it off a little.
A little bit, but hopefully, in the initial version, hopefully some of that was overcome in copy edits.
Oh, it clearly was, I can tell you that. So have no fear, you corrected that problem.
Good.
All right,
good.
Well, so you get to see how you're growing, you see?
And, you know, I want to keep growing. I feel like as a writer, that's part of my own journey. It's not just the characters who are on the journey. I'm definitely on the journey as well.
It's so true, you know, and I try and teach this to my students when I'm teaching, but writing is absolutely about discovery. And you're not just discovering your story, are you, Maureen? You're really discovering yourself through the creative process. At least it is for me. Do you ever feel like that?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, I am a firm believer that we become the stories that we tell ourselves and that writing is an act of transformation for me, for the reader, and it's the story of the transformation of the characters.
That's right. Life is a story we are telling ourselves. I believe that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. You know how it is when you go to a party, and there's like, it's actually kind of a genre of storytelling. I don't know if genre is the right word, but you know, you have six people go to a party and there's a big event that happens at the party and the six people come home and they all tell six different versions of that event.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And that story and each story is their life to some degree. How they interpret that is the life they lead, whether they see a victim or not, or whether they see And each one of us is going to tell it differently. And I feel like writing, one thing that writing has taught me, I don't know if it's taught you this, but to try to tell the best story I can for myself and for
definitely.
Others. Yeah?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it makes me think about that for my own life. What is the best story I can tell for my life? You know, when you were talking about characters coming back and noticing different things and telling different stories, I've been thinking about that and how that plays out in voice, that elusive concept that writers are always talking about, what's the voice of a character? Well, I think a big part of voice is what somebody notices, because we all notice different things, and what we notice reveals a lot about ourselves, and it defines our voice.
Interesting. What the character notices and what the character doesn't notice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because, of course, this is the interesting thing about fiction. All narrative writing is we, the writer, are giving a fraction, just a sliver of what's present in any given moment. And what you choose to highlight, focus your sort of narrative camera on, that's what the story becomes. That brings forth the feeling that you want, don't you think?
Yeah, I really think so. It's those details, and those details create the subtext of the story, I think.
Ah, and that's what you're focusing on right now is subtext.
I've been thinking a lot about that, and actually it comes from community, from talking to some writer friends, and we've been talking about this together and how powerful subtext is, how the things that we don't say are often the things that define us, and that the details we notice highlight, they're kind of a subtext of details. Those things that we notice are usually echo the subtext in our stories.
And so when you think about subtext, are you also thinking about what the what is not said, but what the reader infers in their own sort of imagination, and how powerful it is when they draw their own conclusions that you never directly say.
Yes.
Is that partly what you're talking about?
I think that's really true. And I think as writers, and especially as writers to children, it's really important not to write down to children, to let children have the delight that adult readers have in drawing their own conclusions.
Yeah.
And I think that, and I think subtext, you know, probably great examples of subtext are what in romantic comedies, right? Or in a lot of times in suspense novels, where the character is saying one thing and meaning another thing. So there's that type of subtext, and then there's the subtext of what isn't said, and the reader draws their own conclusions from that. So it works in so many ways in the story.
Yeah, that's really the artistry of learning to say it without saying it. For sure, in dialogue, I mean, when I teach writing, I say, get your characters to say something, but don't have them say it.
Mm.
How would you do that? How can they say one thing and mean another?
Yeah.
But that's the artistry. Well, it looks like we've got a guest who would like to ask you a question, Maureen. So let's bring him on. I think I know who this is. There he is. Jeffrey, is that you?
It is I, Bill, another wonderful interview and another fascinating guest. And I want to wish your lovely mother a very happy birthday.
Everybody wished Judy a happy birthday. Okay. All right. I don't know if she wants that many, but she can have them if she does. You got a question for Maureen?
My question is, a writer myself, I'm always fascinated to learn how other writers play the craft. So can you take me through a typical day of writing in the life of Maureen? And what's your process as it is?
How do you do
What's
your day-to-day process, Maureen?
Well, my day-to-day process, of course, like everybody's, is really influenced by what's going on in my life. And right now, this quarter, I am not teaching. So I can structure my writing time the way I prefer it. And partly it's because the book just came out and I'm traveling around and doing some author events. But up until now, I've been teaching part-time, and so depending on when my classes are, that structures my writing time. So I've gotten pretty adept at being able to write at different times of the day. But if I have my own way, I get up and write first thing in the morning, and I write for several hours, and then I'll take a break, and then in the afternoon I'll deal with the business of writing.
Yeah.
And then all of the other kinds of things. But I feel like my creative time is strongest in the morning, and I have the most energy for it in the morning. And then sometimes I'll come back at night and do a little bit more writing that way.
Yeah. You know, a lot of writers, that the morning is their time. It's my favorite time to do it. And there's something about, you know, I don't know if this is true for you, but when I talk to people about writing, I say, look, don't worry about your mood. You know, a lot of times you aren't going to be in the mood to write, but you'll get in the mood to write once you sit down and allow yourself to relax. But the morning time, the truth is, in the morning, I kind of have him at a neutral place when I wake up. At least that's how I am. Is that true for you? Kind of clean?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I guess I'm a morning person. I have more energy in the morning. And like you say, I write whether I feel like it or not. It's just what I do. And if I get into that zone, that's great. But there are days when I don't, and I still write anyway. Maybe I'm just editing that day. Maybe I'm creating something new, but it's something I do every day.
Now, if you don't get into the zone, have you found, because sometimes, I'll tell you, I've written like a blog or whatever. I do about one a day. And sometimes I write when I think, I'll post it, but Jesus. And then people come out saying, I liked it so much. I'm like, I really don't see it, but okay. And so sometimes I think, you know, so do you ever have the experience where you think, I'm not in the zone, and then you go back and look at that work and you think, well, I was onto something there? Or is it usually always kind of meh and meh?
No, sometimes it surprises me. And I think that's part of the delight of writing, that sometimes your subconscious takes over even when you don't feel like you're in the zone, and something comes out, and maybe it's not the whole thing that you use, maybe it is, or maybe it's just part of it, but something surprises you, and I think that's one of the delights of being a writer.
It's being surprised.
Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm not always surprised. Sometimes I'm disappointed, and I think, gosh, I could have done better today. So.
Yes. Isn't the surprise what keeps us interested in what kind of terrifies us too sometimes, that we don't have that control, that we know that we're going into darkness just a little bit, and that's part of the appeal, but also kind of the, you know, the uncertainty of it that we have to manage in ourselves.
It is, and there's always the fear that I didn't go deep enough, or that the next point isn't going to come. So there are lots of different fears in writing. I totally agree with that.
But it teaches us to trust, doesn't it? Because then
you have to trust the process. You have to trust. You have to trust that if you keep going forward and you keep showing up, that something will come of it. And I think that whole idea of showing up day after day and having that relationship with your work and with the page, gradually builds, and something comes of it. And we can't see, it's only in looking back do we see how it's changed and how we've progressed, I guess.
Yeah, you kind of have to trust that's happening. And you have to trust how you're feeling in that moment as you're writing. And if it feels good, if it feels interesting, that's enough. And maybe to some degree that's all we get, that feeling in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I love that. When I get to that place where I'm writing and I'm not distracted by anything else, that's one of the finest places to be, because I really feel like my focus is sharper, my heart rate slows, I get lost in the story enough to put all of the other dailiness of life aside. And it doesn't always happen, but it's a joy when it does.
No, it's really, I'll tell you, a lot of people don't believe this sometimes, who are maybe just readers, nothing wrong with being just a reader, but who haven't tried to sit down and finish a book, that I think that's what really brings us back more than anything else. I mean, sharing the work is great, getting paid for the work is great, finishing it is great, but when you hit that zone, that vortex, where it's coming that quickly and you lose track of time like that, it's so delicious. I can't think of a better feeling almost in my life, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, don't you come away feeling so
grounded? There's something magical about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I could live there all the time, but I can't quite do it. I'll keep trying. All right. Well, so you've now the next books, the books that are not the Telling Stone, but what you've written after that, are they also for younger people?
That's a good question. And the reason I say that, I was just talking with my agent about one that I finished, and it's told through the eyes of a 12-year-old, but it's a much more adult story. And it's a family generational story that takes place in 1919 New York and in 1955 California. And I think we will probably end up shopping that adult rather than young adult, because the adults in the story are as much a part of the story as that 12-year-old narrator, and they transform as well. So yeah. Sometimes it's hard to know where a story is going to end up, but I would say that that's probably going to go adult. And the other one is a sci-fi set in a near future Seattle, and that's definitely young adult.
Cool. Wow. God, you're popping around all over the place, Maureen, and this doesn't make you nervous.
It does make me nervous, and people, you know, it's probably not the wisest thing to do. In terms of branding, people want you to stay middle grade or young adult. But what I see in my writing is a common thread, and that has to do with myth and magical realism. And I think for me that if I have to brand myself or look for a common thread, that's what it is, and that's what holds my stories together more than the age that they're written for. It's more the sensibility of the story.
Well, that's great, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's the thing that you're truly interested in. The perception that has really caught your curiosity, and you're going to let it take any shape it needs to.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. All right, I got time for one more question for you, Maureen. And I do not believe I asked you this before, but if I did, you'll answer it again. Maybe the answer has changed. So I'd like you to finish the sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you?
I think that the heart of every story is transformation.
Yeah. Yeah, because we all want to transform, don't we?
That's why we like shapeshifters so much, right?
Yeah, that's right. The heart of every story is transformation. I like it. Well, listen, Maureen, the book is Beyond the Door. It's been out since March. You can find it in all your and we'll be seeing the Telling Stone next March.
Next March, right.
Okay, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
So I hope maybe I'll get to talk to you again. But until then, you know, good luck with your next projects, wherever they take you.
Well, thank you, and it's just always a joy talking to you.
Oh, thanks. All right, well, Maureen, take it easy.
All right, you too, Bill. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Oh, transformation. I'm telling you, it's true. Story is about transformation, because every one of us out there, I don't think there's a person on earth who doesn't want to transform, who doesn't feel something about, who's not holding some story about themselves that they would like to release, and in that releasing, they transform and become who they have always been and who they actually are. Transformation. I agree completely. Okay. Well, that was fabulous. I'll be back next week. Same time, I believe I'm talking to Jess, another interviewer here on Author Magazine. But until then, happy birthday, Mom, and everyone else, do what you love. Love what you love. And you know what? You can't go wrong. Love is the only reality.